Olin West, and I started out with the Rock Island Railroad in January of 1951 in Little Rock Passenger Station, working in the relay office. Started out carrying messages from office to office, and worked in the relay office for a little over a year, and then bid in a midnight job out at the Biddle Yards. And at that time we had two separate seniorities. My seniority started out, of course, in the relay office, and then when I bid in a job at the Biddle Yards, well, then my seniority started on the Arkansas Division as a clerk. And I worked at that until I was called into service in 1961, and I spent about 12 years, 12 months, in called on active duty in service in South Carolina. And when I returned, well, there was a job opening in the superintendent's office at Little Rock. I exercised my seniority on that job and worked there until they promoted me to chief clerk to the superintendent. And then they closed the office at a year of 1965, consolidated it with the Southern Division in El Reno, Oklahoma. And they made that the superintendent's office for they called it the Southern Division and instead of the Arkansas Division. They sent me to El Reno. I was there for about 4 months, and come back to Little Rock, and I was there a month when they sent me to Kansas City Armordale Yard for as a yard office supervisor. And the purpose at the Armordale Yard was to put in what was called the pickle system. And the pickle system was a perpetual inventory car loads. That's what ended up as being called a pickle system. But what that amounted to was punch cards from a computer type IBM punch card thing, and with the initial number of the car and then what was the contents of it, and or whether it was empty, and a lot of it, well, all the information off of the waybill was put onto this card, and then it was run through a sorter and sorted out in numerical order. And then when the trains we'd run this list. When the cars was put into a track, then they would check off the card, and that card would go in the stack of that track, just like the car went in there. And then when the track got full, well, all we had to do was pick up that stack of cards that was in that track, and then we had a list of the track. Well, of course, the clerks could see what the outcome of that was going to be, because they wouldn't need any more yard checkers, and they wouldn't need a lot of help in the office, and so they started just snowballing it. And so the supervisors had a lot of the problems of trying to keep them from snowballing it to make it work. And when we first started this system, well, then of course you can imagine how the cars got scattered and cars got in tracks that was marked to a different track, and so we really didn't know what we had in the tracks. So the terminal superintendent at the time and come into my office, and he says, "I've got a list of some tracks here, and he says, I want me and you to go down and to check and see how close they are to being right.
Do we know who that superintendent was?
Yeah, that was Bill O'Connor. He was a terminal superintendent at Kansas City at the time, and so him and I drove down and took this list that we had of these tracks, and right away we seen that our list and the tracks, the cars in the tracks was somewhat different. So anyway, I wrote down as we went down through the track, I wrote down what the cars that wasn't listed on the list, or the cars that was listed on the list wasn't in the track. And so we come up on a mechanical car, and this mechanical car was running, and he says, where does it go? And I said, it's not on the list. And so anyway, we looked all over our list, and we couldn't find this mechanical car anywhere. So as one resort, he says, well, we got to open it up and see what's in it. So he opened the door to the mechanical car and looked in there, and it was a carload of lettuce. And he put his hand up on the lettuce and turned around to me, and he says, I think that this is this year's crop. But anyway, we had some time with the pickle system, but that was the beginning of it, and it started smoothing out, and we really didn't lose that many jobs because we was always shorthanded on employees in Kansas City anyway, because the factories, most of them all just work days, and so nobody wanted to work nights. And so it was hard to get people to work for the railroad, and we was all the time trying to hire people to work for the railroad. They'd come down and interview, and then they'd find out that they was going to have to work nights and all kinds of hours, and so they just wouldn't take it because there was too many industry jobs around that would hire them daylight only, and so that was what they were looking for. So then I asked superintendent about start hiring women, because all we had was men in the office, and it was pretty rough talking and everything like that. And he said, well, I said, if you can get women that'll come in and put up with all these men, well, he says I'll go for it, you know. So a little gal down in the restaurant, went down and of course had coffee just about all of our coffee breaks was down at the restaurant, and this gal in the office, working in the restaurant there, I asked her if she'd like to go to work for the railroad, and her eyes lit up like she she couldn't believe it, you know, and she thought I was just kidding with her, and I told her and give her my card, and I told her to come see me, and she did. She came up and see me, I had her fill out an application, and I sat there and interviewed her, and she was willing to go to work, and didn't make any difference if it was nights or what. So that was my first lady that I hired for the Rock Island there in Kansas City. And that was a trend that started, and about the next several employees that we hired was women. And so it got working out pretty good, and truthfully, the women was doing a lot better job with that pickle system than the men were, because the men, all they could see was the of being cut out of a job sooner or later because of this pickle system. But the women done a real good job, and so we kind of got things straightened out. And so I was there about 2 years, and the general manager then was Bill Thompson. He came out to the yard office one day and come in my office and said, sending our superintendent, Bob Hurt, he was the division superintendent, said I'm sending him to El Reno, Oklahoma the 15th. Or he said, I'm sending him to El Reno, Oklahoma. He says, and he's requested you go with him. He said, do you want to go? And I said, just to get out of this Kansas City, I'm ready. I said, I've had enough of this Armadale yard, I tell you. So he said, well, we're going down the 15th of I believe it was May. Yeah, it was 15th of May. He said, we're going down the 15th. He said, we'll probably call for you about June the 1st. So I started making arrangements getting ready to leave by June the 1st. And on May the 15th, well, I got a call from Bill Thompson in El Reno. He says, we're in El Reno, and he says, we need you now. This was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I guess. I said, well, when do you want me? And he said, I want you in the morning at 8 o'clock. I said, I'll be there. So I called my wife, told her to get my suitcase ready. I was moving to El Reno. And I went, closed up my, started taking all my personal things out of the drawers and went around telling everybody goodbye and I left about 3 o'clock that afternoon, left Armadale Yard, and I think I've been back one time to Armadale Yard and I haven't missed it a bit. That was one hard job in Armadale, just trying to get the pickle system started, and that was the first, it was the initial place that we worked on it. We had a lot of guys from Chicago and everywhere else down to help us with it, and it was a lot of hours put in trying to get that pickle system under to operating properly like we wanted it to, and the vice president of operations was Limestall at the time, and he was very interested in it, and so he was spending a lot of time in Kansas City, and so a lot of us was under the gun. But when I left there, we had it running pretty smooth, a lot smoother than it was. But well, by the way, while we were there, we decided that we need to check the trains coming in and also going out to make sure that the train we had lined up was correctly checked. So we bought a TV system, and we put TV cameras at the end of each yard when the trains would pull out. Well, then they were restricted to 5 miles an hour so that we could look at the monitor in the office and check the car off of the list. And this worked real good. Sometimes the engineer would get a little faster than 5 miles an hour, and it was kind of hard to check it off, but they were told over the radio that they had to slow down, and because we had to get them checked. So one day we was checking an inbound train, was coming in, and right in front of the camera, well, a track with yard engine was switching the track, and they switched it right into the train. It was an incoming train. And I mean, we had it right on the film, and had a picture of it where it hit and everything, where the derailed. And needless to say, that piece of film got stored away right quick. And a lot of the officials had was down there watching that, and they watched it and watched it till they just about wore the tape out before the investigation was over. But they had the evidence right in front of them on it. But it was some sight to see of that cars running in and derailing right there in front of the camera. But that worked pretty well. We checked our trains in and out that way, and pretty well had them lined up, you know, like the list showed them. And once in a while we'd have a stranger in there, but we'd have to look it up and mail them the way bill later on it. But I ended up in El Reno, Oklahoma, as a yard office supervisor, which was the same type of job I had in Armadale Yard. But the El Reno yard was only about half as big as Armadale, and so my job was a whole lot less in El Reno than it was in Armadale, and so I enjoyed my year and a half there in El Reno, and then I got wind that they was about ready to get rid of the yard office supervisor there in El Reno, and turn it back over to letting the yard master run everything. So I put in for a transfer, and so they asked me if I would like to be an assistant train master at Fort Worth, Texas. And I said, well, I'll try it. I don't know much about being a train master, but I said, I'll try it. So they sent me to Fort Worth, Texas, and my territory was Fort Worth and Dallas. And everybody, the switchmen and the trainmen and the clerks and everybody else knew I was a greenhorn at everything. But they didn't ridicule me too much. They went ahead and helped me, and we got along fine. And I was only there about 3 or 4 months, and then they wanted to send me to Joliet, Illinois. And he called me up, it was just fall of the year. In fact, it was about November. And Bill Honig was the superintendent at El Reno, Oklahoma, and he called me up on the phone and said, we're going to transfer you to Blue Island. Said, we're going to transfer you to Blue Island, Illinois. And I said, when are you going to do this? And he said, well, I said, just as soon as you can leave. He says, you can leave tomorrow if you want to. I said, I'll leave tomorrow, but I'll go halfway. I said, I'll go to Little Rock, Arkansas, and that's as far as I'm going to go. And he said, well, now I want you to think about what you're doing. I said, I didn't thought about what I'm doing. And I said, I done got the weather report in Chicago, and I said, it's already snowing up there. And I said, you're not sending this old boy to Chicago, Illinois. So anyway, that's where I resigned my assistant train master's job after about 4 months. And I ended up in Little Rock, Arkansas, exercising my seniority back as a clerk. And that was in 1969, December 1969. I moved back to Little Rock and went to work in the freight office at Little Rock, Arkansas. Of course, they'd moved it out to Biddle Yard at that time. And I worked out there until 1972, and they asked me if I'd take an agent's job at El Dorado, Arkansas, and I accepted that position. Moved to El Dorado in 1972. In 1974, they decided to combine the train master's job and the agent's job, and so then I was out of a job again. I exercised my seniority on the extra board and working out of El Dorado on the extra board. I think my first paycheck was over $1,000. And they decided that that was too much money for an extra board man. And anyway, they we had a lot of clerks fussing about that because I was getting all the overtime because I was the oldest man on the extra board with seniority. So then the job come open in Fordyce, agent's job. I bid it in and moved to Fordyce with my family. And we was in Fordyce 2 years. And in 1976 then, well, I got a chance to exercise my seniority in the agent at Bauxite. Was younger in seniority than I was, and that was a job I'd been wanting for all my life. So I exercised my seniority on the agent's job at Bauxite in 1976.
I have a question. At this point, you had come up through the clerical ranks, and you're bidding in an agent's job at Bauxite. Was there any requirement at this point that you had to be a telegrapher, or was this already gone?
Okay, back in the late 60s, or I believe it was in the 60s, they merged the telegrapher's seniority and the clerk's seniority and the relay seniority. And therefore, there was about seven clerks that had been over me for several years that I jumped over them by getting my relay seniority moved into the clerk seniority. And needless to say, there was several unhappy, six or seven very unhappy people over that. And of course, I kidded some of them about that I was just going to bump them every time I got a chance, just to pay them back for all that time I got bumped. But that was where the seniority was merged. And then when I first learned to, of course, we didn't do any train orders or anything with the old telegraph like we used to. Everything was done on the telephone or on the dispatcher's phone on the loudspeakers, and so we would copy train orders from the dispatcher over the telephone or the dispatcher's loudspeaker phone.
When you began doing this the train order work, with your background as a clerk, did you have to go through any kind of training, rules, examination, so that you became familiar with the dispatching and the train orders business?
We had to take the book of rules exam, but I had done that since I'd been a yard office supervisor, so I already had the book of rules exam already behind me. And then I did do another one for the train master at El Dorado when I bumped on the extra board, because I would be copying train orders at that time, so I done another exam, but I had already passed it, so it wasn't really a big deal at that time because I'd already passed the book of rules and everything several times before. But any of the clerks that done any train orders had to take the book of rules before they could copy train orders. So that was a requirement before they could copy train orders. But I copied train orders at El Dorado, Crossett, Ruston, Louisiana, Bernice, Louisiana, several of those places around Louisiana. And then when the Fordyce job come open, of course, I copied train orders at Fordyce. My first train order copying was when I was on the extra board at El Dorado. That was the first time that I had copied any train orders from the dispatcher. And but fortunately, when I first started out, the dispatcher was an old friend of mine, and so he gave me all the breaks that he could, and so I got broke in real good because of him. And so then when I got some of the tougher ones, well, I was already kind of calloused over, so it didn't make it. But when the bauxite job come open, well, I of course got to exercise my seniority on it, and that was in 1976, 4 years before they went out of business, before the Rock Island went out of business. And we had one big industry, which was Reynolds Metal Company, and which they had anywhere from 50 to 100 cars a day in and out of that place. And it was a big operation doing business with Reynolds Metal Company and also Alcoa. Now, Alcoa, of course, was over on the Missouri Pacific at that tracks. And so all we got from Alcoa was transfers from the Missouri Pacific. We didn't do any of the initial billing from Alcoa because it was originated on the Missouri Pacific and then transferred to us through the interchange. But we got all of the original billings and the final billings at the Reynolds Metal Company because it was on the Rock Island. And those people, they literally dug the ore out of the ground and refined it and then shipped it out. And then they had a lot of imports from Jamaica and places like that that come in. 100, 200 cars at a time would come in.
The imported ore, where in the United States, which port did it come out of?
Well, it come from Jamaica, and I don't know, seemed me like it was down around, I don't know where it was, Louisiana. Seemed like most of it come from Louisiana, that port there. And there might have been some come out of Houston, but around the Houston terminal. But it seemed to me like most of it come out of the east, more or less. Mobile, Alabama was another big import place. And it was we kept a lot of. A lot of import ore, and then of course we had to keep up with the per diem on it because Reynolds couldn't unload it all at that time, and so we'd have to store it in our yard and charge them per diem on it for until they could get it unloaded and get it in. But it was a big operation, and that was one of the best jobs that I ever had on the Rock Island. I enjoyed the agent at bauxite more than any job that I ever held. One reason, because of the nice people that I had to work with, was Reynolds Metal Company and the B&N Railroad, which was a short line between Alcoa and Reynolds. And that was the Bauxite Northern Railroad was what the B&N was. And it was a short line, and they had some nice people to work with on them. And it was, I very seldom ever got a night's sleep because I was called out most every night to copy train orders or do something, but it was nice, and I enjoyed it. And I hate to see it when the Rock Island went out of business. And when they did go out of business, well, then of course the Cotton Belt, they said they would take it, and so we was thrilled over that. And I was fortunate enough to get a job with the Cotton Belt, and so we worked with the Cotton Belt for 30 days, and the Cotton Belt decided they didn't want it. And so then when I was out of a railroad job and hadn't had a railroad job since.